Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I See What You're Saying, the Disciplined Listening Podcast. I'm Michael Reddington, and today it is my pleasure to welcome our next guest, Jeff Patterson. Jeff is the founder of Northwest Fighting Arts. He holds the black belt equivalent in six different martial arts, including being a fourth degree black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He has been essentially a lifetime practitioner of the meditation arts. He dedicates himself not only to his continuous self-development, but developing others, not just as martial artists and athletes, but as whole people as well. And he is the author of his newest book, The Yielding Warrior. And I'm really excited in this conversation, not just to pick his brain on what he's learned through his martial arts experience and teaching, but what does it mean exactly to be a yielding warrior? And how can we all apply the meditative arts in order to be more centered, increase our self-awareness, and be more effective communicators, coaches, teachers, and leaders as well. So this is going to be a very in-depth conversation that's going to take many twists and turns as we go through, as Jeff leads us through his experience, his philosophies, where they come from, and how we apply them. And we're going to go through a bunch of topics, including, maybe most importantly to start, why yielding does not represent weakness, including his three pillars of yielding, our five regulations. He's going to talk through the power of proper breathing, which is probably something I need to practice more, why it is so important to recognize imbalances. And he's going to talk about his three ways to meditate. So maybe all of us can find a way that's beneficial for us in our own lives with how our minds, bodies, and spirits function. So I'm really excited to share this conversation with everybody. Thank you so much for being here today. Of course, while you're here, please just take a second, like the show, subscribe to the show, share it, leave us your feedback. We really appreciate you doing that. Thank you. And of course, just take a quick second to check out our sponsors. Head over to humantel.com. Look at all of their training online and decide which program you think will get you on track fastest to understand what people are likely thinking and feeling at any moment by accurately evaluating changes in their facial expressions and nonverbal communication. Enter the code INQUASIVE25 for 25% off the training of your choice. For the professional interviewers, head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. Get all your questions answered about the certified forensic interviewer designation, who qualifies, how you can earn it, what it can mean for your career moving forward, and learn all you need to know about the International Association of Interviewers, how you can get involved, what you can learn, how you can participate and give to the association as well. And while you're online, please check out inquasive.com. That's where you can learn more about the programs our clients ask us to facilitate for their senior leaders, sales teams, HR teams, and more, to teach them how to uncover hidden value in all of their high-impact conversations. We really appreciate you being here for another week. Thank you so very much for continuing to share your time with us. And now, without further ado, I introduce to you Jeff Patterson. Good morning, Jeff. It's a pleasure to meet you. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, man. I'm really looking forward to the conversation. I've had several today, and this is the one that I've been looking forward to the longest. So you're probably halfway through your day, but I'm at the end of my work day on the East Coast today. So I've been saving this conversation for the end of the day today. And what I would love to do, just to jump right in, is to talk a little bit about your most recent book, The Yielding Warrior. So in doing my research, getting ready for the conversation, you have quite an in-depth experience in martial arts. You also have quite an in-depth experience in meditation. And I'm guessing your book, The Yielding Warrior, brings the lessons from both together. So from the perspective of somebody who believes in the power of meditation, is very curious, but has never practiced it, I guess, in the traditional sit still and be quiet sort of way of meditation, how do you teach people of all backgrounds to take advantage of the meditative arts in their lives?
Yeah, so I'll kind of take that a couple directions. The first one is with a meditation practice, I've broken it down into kind of five directions that you could follow with your practice. There's the physical or performance side of the practice that, you know, a lot of professional athletes and performers are turning to the meditative arts these days because they understand the benefits of increasing that awareness and those fine-tuned motor skills and being able to get in that place where we can elevate the spirit and the energy, but at the same time, stay relaxed and settled so we can perform at a higher level. Then there's the therapeutic side of the practice, which is very good for longevity and keeping the body healthy and mobile. And then we have more of the medical side of the practice, which, you know, all of Chinese medicine is based off of Qigong theory, which has been around for 4,000 years, which is a very strong pillar in the meditative arts. There's the philosophical side of the practice, which has always been a passion of mine. I really like studying this side of the practice because it helps open up your peripheral vision so you can see things from multiple angles and give you insights and help you be more strategic. And there's a lot of different applications there. And then lastly, there's the spiritual side of the practice, which is very good for just becoming more in tune with who we are and staying connected to the source, if you will. And so within those five different paths, you can pretty much touch something that can be beneficial to anybody. Going back to the yielding part of the question, my most recent book, The Yielding Warrior, breaks down the idea of yielding, which has been a concept that I've been very passionate about for many years. And I've broken down yielding into three kind of pillars, if you will. There's physical yielding, mental yielding, and emotional yielding. And physical yielding is the idea that I push you, you push me, whoever's the bigger, stronger person with the most leverage eventually is going to push the other person over. But with yielding, instead of us trying to see who the bigger meathead is, when you push me, I get out of the way of that force, and now I can respond with less effort. So I'm not trying to butt heads with you and see if I'm bigger and stronger than you. And it's obvious how this is beneficial in the martial arts or in athletics, because no matter what sport you play, there's going to be people that are bigger, stronger, and faster than you. And knowing how to yield and be aware and be sensitive to this can help you get the advantage. And this is, you know, you'll go back in history and hear story after story of the smaller person defeating the bigger person. And this plays a role as to how they did that. Now, in order to be good with physical yielding, a lot of things have to come into play. You need to be well-rooted. The lower part of your body needs to be strong and flexible so you can change your central equilibrium without getting tight. The body has to be relaxed. The breath has to be calm. And the mind has to be present. While it's a lifetime journey to really master these skills, from day one, by integrating a meditation practice into your life, you start seeing these things more clearly inside yourself. And this is where it becomes very interesting, because now not only do you see these things more clearly inside yourself, you also start seeing these things more clearly in other people. And this is where we move into what I call mental yielding. So say, for example, you and I are having a conversation and I say something that unsettles you. If I pick up on it from that first sign of energetic imbalance, it's a lot easier to adjust the conversation and keep us in a harmonious place. But if I'm not paying attention to that, and pretty soon I'm so far off track, you want to knock me upside the head, is no good. And so, you know, learning how to use this idea and this awareness in all of our interactions is extremely powerful. You know, one, we're being more considerate, which is something that we could all do more of. And two, it allows us to be strategic, so we can guide the conversation to a positive outcome with the least amount of resistance. And this is beneficial in our relationships and sales and negotiations and business and, you know, so many applications for this side of the practice. And then the third pillar of yielding is emotional yielding. And emotional yielding is very much like mental yielding, but with our own interpersonal conflicts. So you think about, oftentimes something will happen to us and we'll respond and we'll go down this path, and we might get an hour, a day, a week down the road and realize maybe that wasn't the best choice. But with yielding and our heightened awareness through the meditative arts, when these things happen, we're able to stay more present, kind of sit back and analyze what's going on, be in the moment, not let our emotions distract us and get us off track. and then make a more educated decision that oftentimes can save us a lot of heartache on the other side. You know, and I've been explaining this idea or this concept of yielding for many years. I've been running my academy here for 30 years. One of the most common things I'll hear people say is, yielding makes a lot of sense. In fact, I do that all the time. Well, I would agree in that I think everybody does some degree of yielding all the time, whether they label it that or not. However, it's kind of like if you or I were to walk into a crime scene with a detective who's been on the job for 30 years, I guarantee you that person would see things about the series of events and the timeline that I know at least I would have no clue of. And the meditative arts helps us see things inside of ourselves and other people that I truly believe most people will go through life and never have any clue of without a practice like this in their life.
I believe it. And one of the reasons why I was really looking forward to this conversation is to learn more about the different forms of meditation and how to apply it specifically for myself. I mean, selfishly, I hope everybody learns from it. But if I get to choose who I talk to, why not talk to somebody who can help me with something I'd like to learn more about? But I love how you broke down yielding into those three different areas. I guess from the traditional or stereotypical martial arts standpoint, you know, most of my teammates are bigger and stronger than me. So I'm probably not going to hit a blast double on anybody. But if we can get into that push-pull and I can hit a sumigeishi, well, then I'm probably going to end up on top and feel a lot better about where I am. And I'm not tired yet because you did all the work for me. And just working with a group of executives last week up in New York, the question that I got was, you know, if somebody is being emotional and taking the conversation someplace it doesn't need to go, like, well, how do I handle that? Well, to your point, I don't want to create a confrontation. I don't want to tell them that I'm wrong or talk over them like their parent. But if I can change how I listen, if I can listen for something that they say, that I can use their words to get to where I want to go, now I feel like, and please, this is your concept, not mine, I'm yielding enough to get what I need from them, to use their energy, their direction to get me back to where I need to go. And I love how you work the word in strategic. I feel like, and correct me on this, please, your definition of yielding works very well when we have a strategy, when we have someplace we want to go. Like, I'm not giving in, I'm not giving up, I'm not being a doormat. I am strategically, whether emotionally, physically, mentally, allowing somebody else or something else to help me get to where I want to be. Am I interpreting that at all in the direction that you mean it?
Yeah, you know, and I like that you brought that up, because so often, you know, teaching martial arts here at the academy, we'll get somebody with a very type A aggressive personality. And when you start talking to them about yielding, they get turned off by it. They're like thinking that it's weak, that it has no merit if you can just make something happen, you know. And the funny thing is I got turned on to the meditative arts at a fairly young age from a boxing coach. And it doesn't get much more aggressive than boxing, right? You know, and so here's somebody who was a very well-known coach. He had created world champions at both the amateur and the professional level. And he's telling me to go do Tai Chi and meditate if I want to be a better boxer. And, you know, I'm a 19-year-old kid thinking, you know, isn't that for the old people in the park? How's that going to help me? You know, and it's, you know, what martial art do you practice?
Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Okay. So you think about in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, we do that here at the academy as well. And if, you know, for me, I'm getting older. There's a lot of younger guys coming in that are a lot stronger than I am. And if I'm going up against another black belt who is stronger than me and faster than me and younger than me, I know that they're probably going to get the takedown. I know that once we go to the mat and they get on, they're going to get on top because they're more aggressive. But if my defensive skills are so good that I wait until they go for the submission and they give me space and now I counter what they're doing, now I'm ending up on top without having to go through all the struggle in those previous battles to get there. And so that strategic idea, while it may seem like I'm giving up in the beginning, but I'm not giving up. I'm leading them to where I can get to where I want to go with the least amount of resistance. Because maybe I might have been able to win one of those battles, but if I'm beating myself up to win one of those battles, how good is that for me to walk away from that exchange, right? So it's being educated and smart, being able to lead people to those positive desired outcomes without having all the confrontation.
I love everything that you just said. You are speaking my language completely. I feel like in many situations, the direct path is the path of most resistance. If I go directly for what I want in a physical situation, an emotional situation, a conversation, I'm probably going to create more resistance and then likely blame it on the other person, even though it's a direct result of my choice. And I'm for certain not on your level in jiu-jitsu, and I don't want to even create that impression in anybody's mind. But you just basically outlined my entire strategy. How can I get you to do as much work as possible to end up where I want to be, where you're tired, I feel good, there's time left on the clock, and now I can go to work? Like, that's, you just completely spelled it out. I feel like, and I love how you got there from boxing. Like, how many people, I want you to go punch this guy in the face as hard as you can, as often as you can, and then I want you to go meditate. Like, that typically doesn't work together hand in hand. I would imagine that as you work with people to introduce this concept of yielding, it's met with initial resistance, occasionally at least, from people who either think it's weak, don't see how it fits in strategically, it doesn't line up with their self-image. How do you coach people in order to help them begin to wrap their arms around the fact that not only is yielding the opposite of weak in many situations, but it creates often real and unexpected strategic advantages?
I think it's important to educate them on really what yielding means, because a lot of times people hear yielding and they think just giving up. You know, yielding has been used in military strategy and battles, and, you know, it doesn't get more aggressive than a military conflict, right? And so understanding what it means to say yielding and how it can be so strategic, and having somebody who has that type A personality or that aggressive nature and showing them how they can do this, not only makes them better, but it also makes them more fun for people that aren't as good as them and aren't as far along as them to roll with them when they're on the mat. So for example, you know, if I've got some guy who's a purple or brown belt and is just a beast and very strong and very aggressive, and he goes with a new white belt who is kind of timid and a little bit put off, and he just goes and spanks him and puts him out, you know, tap, 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 tap. One, he's going to scare that other person away. And two, is he really benefiting from that exchange? I'm talking about the purple or brown belt. Not at all. But if he can go with that person and let him get ahead and defend and let him get ahead and kind of play this game, now he's playing with this person who doesn't know much of anything, and he's still fine-tuning and sharpening his skills. And if you can do that and understand that strategy, this is where so many people, I feel, in the martial arts get caught up, and they think that, you know, they get to this point where they're pretty competent. They're a purple belt, brown belt, black belt, or wherever they are. And they start thinking, I tap him out, I tap him out. And they get to this point where they think they're better than they are. And what happens is they start getting a bit of an ego going. And if you can just approach it to where you're, every time you go to the mat, you're trying to make yourself better. And you can make yourself better with a white belt, a blue belt, a purple belt. It doesn't matter what their level is. And if you approach it to where you say, every exchange I have with this white belt, with that purple belt, with this black belt, that person's going to walk away from this exchange feeling better about the time they spent with me than they did before we got on the mat, that's a win in my book. Because now you're making that person better, you're building up their ability technically and mentally, and you're doing a service to yourself by coming away from that position in a better position as well.
Again, just, you know, I've practiced a fraction of the amount of time that you have, but philosophically 100% aligned. How do we make everybody better? How do we put ourselves in bad positions to learn from? How do we fine tune the technical details? So to use that as, is it a metaphor or an analogy? I don't know, whichever. Take that into life and communication. So if on the mats, we develop, I'm developing, let me make sure we put that out there clearly, a true level of like a sincere level of confidence that allows myself to be put in bad or jeopardizing positions, or maybe, like you said, not going for the win every time, however you want to take it, in order not only to learn and develop myself, but to develop others. How do we help people develop that same sense of sincere confidence in off the mats, in life, in their conversations, in order to use some of these yielding and meditative arts to their full or fuller potential?
You know, that's a great question. And I think when it comes to using the meditative arts as an aid to help with that, it's really important to understand the underlying principles of the meditative arts. And I've broken down what I call the five regulations. They are regulating the body, regulating the breath, regulating the mind, regulating the energy, and regulating the spirit. And briefly, I'll kind of touch on what I mean by when I say these Please. Five areas. So regulating the body is basically being aware of your skeletal alignment, your muscular tension in the body. And an example of this would be, you know, think about a time when maybe you're sitting down at your computer for 3 or 4 hours and your shoulders are rounded forward, you're feeling lethargic, maybe your neck's getting sore. And another time when the most important person in your world walks in the room and your body perks up and you feel like you're on top of the world. Well, these two different energetic states, we're in 100% control of all day, every day. And so if we can just improve our awareness and pay attention to these, we can adjust how we feel physically, mentally, and emotionally just by this one idea. On a little bit of a deeper level with body regulation involves maintaining some kind of muscular structure in the body to keep us strong and healthy, keeping flexibility in the body, eating a healthy diet, and maintaining an appropriate amount of sleep. All of that is included in that body regulation section. Then we go into regulating the breath. And regulating the breath is an extremely deep topic, and oftentimes Qigong is referred to as the science of the breath because there's literally hundreds of different breathing strategies. And because of this, we broadly categorize them into yin methods and yang methods. Yin methods are often deeper, more holistic style of meditations. And an example of a yin breath would be if you ever listen to somebody sleep, their natural breathing pattern is a longer inhale and a shorter exhale. And this is the body's natural way of bringing our conscious mind into our subconscious mind, which is where we are when we're sleeping and dreaming. And so if we want to emulate this style of energetic expression within our meditation practice, we can do longer inhales, soft retentions at the end of the inhale, and shorter exhales to help bring that energy inward, which is great for stress reduction, dealing with anxiety or panic attacks, or boosting our creativity. There's lots of reasons why we would focus on this yin side of the breath. Then we have the yang side of the breath, which is more aggressive. It's kind of like if you ever had to push your car, you pick up something heavy, your natural instinct is to exhale, put tension in the breath, maybe even make the breath audible. And this helps generate energy and make it expansive. Well, when we start learning how to use the breath strategically in our everyday lives, we can use it as a regulator to control our physical, mental, and emotional well-being. You know, we all go through the day with emotional ups and downs. Some people are like a roller coaster, others may be a little more balanced. But when you start learning these strategies and you see yourself getting excited, we can use the breath to bring you back down. Or when you feel yourself starting to feel depleted, you can use the yang breath to pick you back up. And so it's very valuable to understand the science behind the breath so we can use it in our ritual, active, and practices throughout the day to help control our physical well-being, mental well-being, and emotional well-being. And then the third regulation is regulating the mind. Regulating the mind is something you'll work with for the rest of your life. You know, a lot of people have come to this practice and they'll tell me that they tried meditation before, but it just didn't work for them. They couldn't quiet their mind. And somewhere along the way, people got this misguided idea that in order to be successful with meditation, that you have to reach this level where nothing bothers you. You're in this state of nirvana. And, you know, it couldn't be further from the truth, because if, for example, you're doing a sitting meditation or maybe a movement practice like Tai Chi or Qigong, and you're sitting there for 20 minutes and you get distracted 50 times, and every time you get distracted, you recognize the imbalance and you use your posture, your breath, or your movement to help bring you back to center, you just got 50 repetitions of being off balance and finding your focus again. And if you do that every day, every month, every year, you start to develop this power and this ability that no matter what life throws at you, you're able to come back to that center and find that place of balance. And so this is extremely powerful. There's this old Chinese story that I really enjoy that illustrates this fact. And it talks about these two old monks who are walking down this dirt road after a huge rainstorm. And they come up to this big mud puddle. And on the other side of the puddle is this beautiful little girl who's standing there in a white dress, and she's crying. And the older of the two monks, he hollers across the puddle and says, "Is everything okay? Can we help you?" And she says, "I need to be somewhere, but if I walk across this puddle, I'm going to get my dress all dirty." So he rolls up his pant legs and he walks across the puddle and picks her up, puts her on his back, takes her to the other side, sets her down, and she's off on her way. Well, him and the younger monk are walking a couple miles further down the road. And finally, the younger monk is just furious and he says, "You know we're not supposed to touch girls, but you did back there at the puddle." And the older monk looks down and says, "You're still thinking about that girl? I left her back there at the puddle." And how many times in life do we got to get 2 miles down the muddy road before we realize we got to let that thing go? And so learning how to recognize these imbalances and find our way back to focus is an extremely important part of this practice. And as you can clearly see, it affects everything you do in life, just having this one skill. Then the fourth regulation is regulating the energy. And this is a topic that we could literally talk for hours about. But the basic idea is, once you've reached a competent level in regulating the body, the breath, and the mind, we now have the tools to circulate the energy in the body, to lead it inward, to extend it outward, to get different expressions through that practice that help regulate our well-being as well. And then the fifth regulation is regulating the spirit. And that's the idea of learning how to elevate our energy and our excitement level, if you will, while at the same time staying rooted and focused so we don't get tense and tight. And you'll notice that most people, when they get excited, they get tense. But if you can pick up that energy and that excitement and at the same time be settled, focused, now you can be more responsive. And so there's a lot of ways that we can apply this as well. But you can see, by building these foundational principles in your meditation practice, it can affect anything you do in life.
So much for me to listen to, internalize, come back to. If you could do me a favor and just touch me on the shoulder and just give me the ability to do all of those things, I would really be grateful. For me, I've always been fascinated with people who have the ability to stay calm, the ability to stay loose, the ability to not be tight, or, you know, just be present and fluid in the moment. And I feel like so much of what you just talked about really speaks to that. Of all the things I was thinking about coming back to as I was listening to you go through that, I think there's two I'd like to with the time that we have. One is regulating the breath in order to help us focus, maintain our energy, even like keep our heart rate down, maybe keep our adrenaline down, stay more focused in the moment. I know you mentioned there's hundreds of different strategies or approaches to do it, so I wouldn't dare, you know, ask to go in too many different directions. But from your practice, whether it's the yin, whether it's the yang, whether it's even something different, are there particular breathing techniques that you have found to be more effective in helping people regulate, I would imagine, everything else, their mind, their body, just by regulating their breath in order to stay more calm and more present in the moment?
There is certain things that you can do when you notice these imbalances. But the most important thing to make a note of here is that, you know, a lot of times, you know, I'll have somebody come in and they'll say, you know, "I'm suffering from panic attacks," or "I have this ailment," or "What's a breathing strategy I can do to deal with this for a competition or whatever it is. And while there are some things that we can talk about that will help in those scenarios, the true masters at this and the people that are really good at staying relaxed and focused, they're there because they're living that lifestyle, and that's how they are at every imbalance that hits their way. It's not a pill that they take once these problems come up and they use this breathing strategy to solve that problem. It's that they're approaching life from this place of balance. And if you can do that, that's where you see the most results. It's like, you know, you think about a time where maybe you're having a stressful day and you walk in and somebody says one thing to throw you off. That response is going to be a lot different than if you come in and you're having a great day and somebody says something really negative to you. A lot of times you can treat them with respect and kind of detour the thing and not even make much of it. And so if we can learn how to integrate the meditative arts into our life and create an evolving life practice with these skills, now they affect all of those little situations. Now, kind of back to, I think, what your question was asking, where is there something to do in those times of stress? There is, you know, and you can always come back to these five regulations and being aware of your posture, your breath, and your mindset. And noticing when something happens, is your posture weak? Are you bowing forward? Are you feeling aggressive and having your shoulders back? That energetic shift right there of being more centered and balanced will adjust how we feel. And then, is my breath short and am I taking in sipping inhales or am I huffing and puffing? Where is my breath at? And finding balance with the breath. And of course, there's different breathing techniques you can do to try to find that balance. But the problem is, it's like, it's hard to stop an avalanche once all the rocks are rolling down the hill. But if you drop a pebble, it's easy to pick it up before it knocks another rock loose. And the heightened awareness you gain by integrating meditation in your life allows you to be able to pick up those pebbles. And that's the where the true mastery is at, is when we can see these imbalances before they get too far down the muddy road. And that's where we really reap the benefits from integrating a practice like this into our life.
That's a great answer. And I really appreciate it. And I was watching you listen to me. I was watching you listen to me ask the question. I'm like, I'm not asking a good question, but I love the way that you brought it back around. And your avalanche analogy is perfect. If I'm working harder to be in balance more consistently, then I'm going to run into less problems where I have to regulate my breath or regulate my mindset. And when I do, I don't have as far to travel to get back to balance because I'm practicing being in balance all the time. If I'm consistently out of balance, then if I don't know where my center is, how do I even begin to create a pathway back to it? So I think that's a phenomenal explanation and a real important checkpoint for me as I listen to that explanation. And you brought up several times too, recognizing imbalances. And to inadvertently make it about me for 1 second, I'm not trying to, but I don't have a better way to do this. So I'm just going to. If I'm teaching a class and somebody says, well, I wish I knew this 2 weeks ago when I had this problem, or I wish I knew this a month ago where I had that problem, my typical response is, you're actually better off because now you have a mental anchor. You're going to be in a similar situation again. So now you can take the lesson you learned today, tie it to that mental anchor, and the next time you're in a situation, you can apply it. And I feel like what you're saying, like you lost attention 50 times, you actually got 50 reps of refocusing. Like that's a totally different mindset shift. That's a way to, if I'm going to look at meditation, which I must confess I have, that said, I have a really difficult time keeping my mind quiet. I do. So, but now instead of saying, don't do it because I'm going to lose my attention, I can say, do it because I'm going to get more reps regaining my attention or regaining my focus. I think that's a spectacular way to look at it. You mentioned the muddy road a couple of times. So here's the second one I was going to go back to. The whole thought of letting go. I know that can mean different things to different people. One gentleman, one monk was still holding on to the girl or the thought of the girl 2 miles down the road. The other one was like, dude, I left that all the way back there. Are there, I guess this is, you know, another easy button question, and there is no easy button. Are there techniques or philosophies or mindsets to help people let go faster or healthier in order to help them move on, be more balanced, be more productive?
You know, the biggest secret with that is noticing the first sign of something that's taking you down that road you need to let go of. You know, it's all so often that we'll sit and stew on things, you know, and we're all guilty of this. I've been guilty of it many times, where something will happen to us and it'll affect us negatively. And then we'll think of 30, 50, 100, 1,000 other things that build energy into this negative thing that happened to us. And by the time we do that, it's a lot harder to change. But if you recognize that thing and how it's starting to take you down that path, and because we're so balanced in our day-to-day lives, physically, mentally, energetically, emotionally, it's easier. You know, life is never easy, right? But it's easier to recognize these things and say, how's my posture right now? How's my breath right now? How can I come back to center and find this so it doesn't take me down that road too far? And, you know, that's, I think, the biggest benefit in this piece of the meditative practice when we're talking about mindset, is that by having that heightened awareness and noticing, you know, the little things that are going on, you know, a lot of times, give you an example. A lot of times in Tai Chi, there's very subtle movements. For example, without having to show you a movement, think about going to grab a glass. A lot of people don't even think twice about it. They go to grab the glass, but it's not one movement grabbing the glass. Think about all of the little tiny muscle groups in your forearm and your shoulder and your core, how your breath changes, how maybe you shift your weight when you go to grab. I guarantee you that no matter how skillful you are at picking up a glass, if you were to do it 1,000 times, you could never do it exactly the same 2 times in a row. Now, having that awareness of that heightened sensitivity of how the body moves and how the breath works with the body and your timing and all of those things that go on, that awareness helps us physically, mentally, and emotionally. So when we're talking about going down that muddy road, by being able to break it down into a million little pictures and recognizing it on the first couple rather than 100,000 in, makes a huge, huge difference.
And I imagine that answer ties back to your answer to my previous question, where if we do a better job staying centered and raising our self-awareness, we can be more consistent in identifying these early warning signs and catching them while they're still early enough for us to make an impactful change, as opposed to being caught so far down the line. Now we're all strung out or wired up or whatever phrase you want to use. And it's a much more difficult process for us to unwind ourselves and come back to center.
Yeah.
So I believe in your work, you talk about different ways that we can meditate. So if I'm asking the question correctly, and if I'm not, please correct me, what are the different ways that we can meditate in order to work on achieving this sense of balance or awareness?
There's many different methods as far as movement practices, breathing strategies, philosophical trainings that you can do. And if you try to get into that too deeply, it can be very confusing. What I've done is I've broken it down into kind of 3 main focuses. So we want to have a ritual practice every day. And this is something where we're setting time aside, we're shutting off the screens, we're not looking at our cell phone, or we're just turning our focus inward. And that could be a sitting practice. It could be a movement practice like Tai Chi or Qigong. Then we want to have active practices. And active practices are things that we do to integrate this style of awareness and sensitivity into everything we do. They could be done when you're walking down the street or standing in line at the grocery store. They could be as simple as counting out 10 breaths or doing a simple movement practice, whatever that is. So now we're integrating this stuff into our day-to-day lives and maintaining that sense of awareness and regulation. And then the third pillar are philosophical trainings. And these can be used in both active and ritual-based settings. And they're used to help expand our awareness mentally and start seeing things from multiple angles. I always tell people it's like, you know, if you focus on one point, you know, 30 feet away, you're very narrow visioned and focused. But when you open up your peripheral vision and try to see everything in your room, that's what the philosophical concepts do for you, is they help see things from multiple angles. So now you can approach things with a little bit more of an open mind and a little bit more strategy to how you respond.
I like the differentiation and also how they intertwine, how they work together. For me, I think the active is something that I feel like I've had a little bit more maybe success with. Philosophical, I come in and out of, but I certainly enjoy. The ritual is probably where I might need the most work or opportunity. People who observe me might think totally different, by the way, but just my thought is I look at the three. When I think about being present in the moment, when I think about it conversationally, often if people ask me, how do you be present in the moment? There's lots of ways to answer that. But I feel like if the outcome of what I'm trying to achieve is important enough, then I can see past or see through a lot of the emotional things that are changing in front of me right now, because the outcome is more important to me than what I'm feeling in the moment. Therefore, I'm able to stay present. When I think about it in like a martial arts practice, if I am in a neutral or dominant position, I actually feel like it's harder to stay present because I'm thinking about what are my options? What could I do? Where could I go? Where should my grips be? What finish should I go for? But I feel like if I'm in a losing position, like if I am on the bottom, if I am stuck, if somebody has grips I can't get out of, if I am close to being finished, that is when I'm hyper present in the moment, because the only thing that matters is where my elbow goes next, where my chin goes next, where my foot goes next. Like something very little can make all the difference in the world. So when you think about generating the ability to be present in the moment, I imagine that all three of those practices really work into that for you. Is there a certain perspective or practice that you really work on to help yourself and others stay present?
I think that's what creating an evolving life practice with the meditative arts is very much about, is developing those life skills and lifestyles to be able to live that way. And it comes from a combination of being consistent and having that daily ritual that you're doing every day, integrating these practices, and then training your mind to think this way. You know, it's for somebody new coming to the practice, I, as a teacher for over 30 years, have struggled with over and over again, trying to find ways to be creative to get people to see the value in this practice, because there's so much richness in this practice that if you really implemented it and started to live it, if you did that, consider, I always tell my students this when they come in, I was like, you know, if you do what I tell you to do for the first year and you do a 20-minute ritual every day and you integrate some of these active practices and you keep that up every day for a year, you'll do this for the rest of your life. And I've seen this over and over again, but getting somebody to do something every day for a year, as you know, as a teacher, is very difficult. And so I've come up with three considerations that I like people to spend some time with when they first start their practice. And I find that if they really put some heartfelt thought into these three considerations, that they're so much more likely to be successful with the practice. And the first one is thinking about, why are you being drawn to the practice and what is important for you to get out of this practice? And for some people, it might be being more healthy and staying active so they can watch their grandkids grow up. Other people, it might be because they're dealing with a stress disorder, or maybe it's an athlete who wants to improve their performance. And when you have that reason, then to take it a little bit deeper, think of 10 or 20 reason things that would change in your life if you accomplish that for the positive. How is your interpersonal communication going to change? How is your relationship with others? How is your work going to change? And really put some time and build the fuel and understand what this really means to you by doing this. And then flip the coin and think, if I don't accomplish this goal, what are 10 or 20 negative things that are going to happen in my life by not accomplishing this? And in doing this, it gives you the fuel. So tomorrow morning when your alarm goes off and it's time to get up and meditate, you're not tempted to say, oh, I'll hit the snooze button and do it tomorrow. You're like, hey, it's time to get up. I've got something to do. I'm getting benefit from this. This is who I want to be, right? And so having that is very important. The next consideration is the idea of consistency. And I have an old story that I always love to tell here that I think illustrates this idea very well. And it's about this old Chinese stone cutter who makes these beautiful sculptures of animals and landscapes. And, you know, his work is so profound that people see it anywhere and they just know it's his. Well, because of his fame, if you will, and how well known he is, he'll have people from all over the country that want to come stay with him for years at a time and learn the trade. Well, every morning, the stonecutter, he goes down to the river and begins his day meditating. And one day after his meditation session, he's walking along the river and he has this profound vision of this big 6 foot tall, mystical Chinese jade dragon. And he's so taken by this vision that he just knows that this has to be his next project. So he spends the next few months traveling all around looking for the perfect stone for his new creation. Finally, when he finds the jade, he takes it back to his place and spends the next period of time, day in and out, just sitting with the stone and trying to feel the energy and envision how this jade or this dragon is going to appear. And few days roll by, and finally he begins work, and he carefully places his chisel on the backside of the rock and starts tapping away with his hammer hundreds, if not thousands of times a day, over and over to the exact same spot, and no change. A few days went by and still nothing. A few more days went by, and his apprentices started second-guessing him and thinking, man, why doesn't he try something else? This doesn't seem to be doing anything. A few more days went by, thousands of taps to the chisel, and finally he hits the chisel, and this big 3 foot section of the stone comes off and creates this smooth, slightly curved line that's going to soon be part of the dragon's back. And one of his apprentices who was watching asks, how did you know that strike was going to break the stone? And he said, it wasn't that strike that broke the stone. It was the thousands of strikes before it that broke the stone. And with a bit of a discouraged tone, the apprentice said, I've been watching you and there was no change. Why didn't you try something else? And the stonecutter got down on one knee and he felt the smooth line that he just created. And he said, each strike was not wasted. The stone was changing beneath the surface. And even though we couldn't see the change with our naked eye, it is through that consistency and repetition that not only was the stone changing, but so is the one who wields the hammer. And the reason why I like this story so well is because it's the meditative arts. You know, we're practicing this breath work and these movement practices and studying these philosophical concepts, and we don't always see the change happening day to day, but through our consistency and effort, we're laying the foundation to reap these fruits for the rest of our lives. And if you put the work in, it'll be one of the best things you ever do. And then the third consideration is you have to find a guide. The meditative arts is an extremely deep well. And, you know, I've been studying for 36 years and I'm just a student learning all the time. You know, if you think that you're going to be self-taught and go out there and sift through the millions of videos on YouTube or one app or the other and get any kind of depth in the practice, you're going to waste a lot of time and never get below the surface. In fact, I've had students that come in here to the academy that have been self-taught and, you know, they spend 10, 15 years practicing meditation, and they'll come in and they'll realize that, you know, they're not much further along than somebody who's been here for 6 or 12 months. And, you know, our lives are short and your time is valuable, and it doesn't take much to find somebody to help you. I mean, can you imagine if you never knew anything about jujitsu and you said, I'm going to go be self-taught and learn jujitsu? I mean, it just, it's not going to happen, you know? And so if you can put some time and thinking about what's important to you and why you want to do the practice, understanding that consistency is key to the practice and finding somebody to have in your corner to help point you in the right direction, meditation will be one of the best things you ever do for yourself.
I love the story about the stone, or the, I guess the stone and the stone cutter, because he who wields the hammer was just as much of that story as the stone itself. But even the through thread to those messages, the in anything we do, consistency is important. Finding the right guide is important. Aligning our mission with our outcomes is important to give us the motivation and the discipline, especially on the mornings where we do want to hit snooze. Like, all of that is true in so many ways beyond just the meditative practices, but especially with the meditative practices. I'm keeping an eye on the clock. I want to be very respectful of your schedule. Choose your own adventure time, I guess. The question I was going to ask, but if you have something else that you want to talk about, please do with the few minutes that we have left, is for people who might be looking to start a ritual. Are there, I know it's probably different for every person in every situation, but do you have, I guess question one to consider would be, do you have a recommendation for those of us that would like to start rituals, where to start? Or if based on the few minutes we have left, you think there's something more important to talk about, go there, because I want to make the most of the time that we have together.
So there's many different rituals that we can incorporate. And that's why I think it's so important to have a guide, because they will be able to help find something that's catered to you and give you the idea that, you know, if you want to follow the performance path or the medical path or the spiritual path, there's different things that we can integrate. There are a lot of things that cross over that help you build those foundational principles. So I think you need to find somebody to help you and tell them what you want to do. You know, find, you know, like we have at theyieldingwarrior.com, I've got an online program there that teaches you about movement practices, still practices, from sitting meditation, standing meditation, studying breath work, integrating these philosophical concepts. That's a great place to start to give you some ideas on paths that you might want to follow. There's just so many different ways out there that you can begin the practice without knowing you personally. It's hard to make any one recommendation of what ritual I would recommend.
Very fair. I really appreciate it. You just mentioned yieldingwarrior.com and some of the online tools that you have available. Shameless promotion time for people who have been listening and have been enjoying the conversation, reflecting on how this could impact their life, their outcomes, personal, family, business, beyond. Where can they go to continue to connect with you, learn from you, and put some of this into practice?
So right now, kind of a great intro. If anybody out there is interested, I've got a free gift that I'm giving away. It's members.theyieldingwarrior.com/one-breath-away. It's a bit of a mouthful there, but you can go there. I've got two eBooks in there, one on resets and one on the five regulations. There's a list of different reset meditations you can learn, and it's a great intro to the meditative arts to give you some of the mindset training and some actual practices that you can learn. And all you need to do to get access to that is enter your email. It's 100% free. Also, I have my books out there through Amazon or through our website. And then, you know, my more in-depth online programs that you can get access to through the website as well.
Awesome. I'll put all those links in, and I will especially make sure we've got the link for the free gift that you mentioned, so people can click on that. They don't have to go hunting for it. It'll be right there. I know we've only got a couple minutes left. Are there any final thoughts, principles, concepts you want to make sure we introduce with the 2 minutes or so we have left for the people listening?
Yes. One thing anybody out there who's considering this practice, I would be willing to guarantee if you just put some effort into this, started a ritual practice, did some active practices throughout the day, and kept that up for a year, you'll do this practice for the rest of your life, and it'll be one of the best things you ever do for yourself. And I can't recommend it enough. And whether it's with me or somebody else, I just want you to take it on and do it, because I feel like this world would be such a better place if everybody meditated 20 minutes a day, you know? So I wish you the best of luck with that.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Hopefully we have the time to continue this conversation. So many questions I wish I had the time to ask and rows to go down. I'm super interested in philosophy. We didn't have the opportunity to go that. So maybe another time we'll have the chance, if you're open to it, to continue the conversation. But I can't thank you enough for sharing your time, your wisdom, your experience with us today. I took a page and a half of notes while I was listening to you, so I have much to go reflect upon. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Yeah, take care.
Jeff, thank you so much for a great conversation. I appreciate you sharing your time, all your insight, the depth that you went through in your conversation, really understanding how not only some of these meditative arts work, but how they apply, how we can adjust them. I love the concept of really working hard to find our own center so we can come back to it. If we're not constantly practicing and getting the reps, it'll be more difficult. Really finding our own rituals, how it can work for us individually, is very important. That topic of consistency, I loved how you changed my mindset. It's not that I lost my perspective or my focus 50 times. It's I regained my focus 50 times and I'm getting more reps for how to do so. The importance of finding the right guide, just getting started, finding 20 minutes a day, also very important. I do truly believe and agree that the meditative arts can have a significant impact on our lives. I just need to find a way to practice what you've been preaching, be more consistent with it in my own life. Thank you very much for being here today, Jeff. I truly appreciate it. Thank you, everybody that spent the time to listen to the conversation. We appreciate you being here another week. Hopefully you have new perspectives, new ideas, new approaches to the meditative arts that you can apply in your own lives as well. Thank you very much for being here. And of course, while you're here, please just take a second, like the show, share the show, subscribe to the show, leave us your feedback. What would you like to hear more or less of? We'd really like to hear from you. And of course, please check out our sponsors. Head over to humantel.com and enter the code INCLUSIVE25 for 25% off their best in-class online training to develop the skill set of understanding what people are likely thinking and feeling in real time, by identifying shifts in their nonverbal communication and facial expressions. For the professional interviewers, head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. Get all your questions answered about joining the International Association of Interviewers, contributing to the association, what you can get from the association, the value that you can pull from those relationships as well. And that's also where you can learn about the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. Who qualifies? How do you earn the designation? What could it mean for your career moving forward? And finally, while you're online, please check out inclusive.com. That's where you can learn more about the programs our clients ask us to custom facilitate for their senior leaders, sales teams, HR teams, and more, to teach them the strategic observation and persuasive communication skills necessary to uncover hidden value across all of their high-value conversations. Thank you for being here week after week. We truly appreciate it. Please stay safe, take care of each other, and we'll see you next time.